Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is a returning guest. Her name is Kate Montana, and she was on my show last on November 24th, 2013, a few years ago, but I remember it clearly. We discussed her book, Unearthing Venus. So if you ever want to listen to that show, I do have it in the archive, 11-24-13. But today, we're going to be talking about her newly released book, The E-Word, Ego, Enlightenment, and Other Essentials. Through stories, practices, and a masterful detangling of consciousness, psychology, and quantum physics, The E-Word exposes the dysfunctional nature of the personal ego and shows how the ego can be expanded, not inflated, into a more evolved and authentic level of functioning called transpersonal consciousness, where human beings are liberated from the misperceptions of separation from life, the world, and each other that is, that lie at the foundation of all human suffering and conflict. Again, author of Unearthing Venus, My Search for the Woman Within, and co-author of The Heart of the Master with Dr. Darren Weissman. Kate has a master's degree in humanistic psychology and writes and teaches about the ego, transpersonal, and transcendent consciousness, quantum physics, and evolution. You can find out more by visiting her website, which is www.katemontana.com. And that's CATEMontana.com. And I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Kate to the show. Good day, Kate.
Hi, great to be here, Robert. Boy, listening to you say all those things that that you get sent in a press kit, it's like, oh my golly, that sounds like heavy duty stuff.
Who is that you just talked about, huh?
Really?
Well, I know, but you know, I mean, and that was just the tip of the iceberg. I could have talked for a good another 5 minutes about your credentials, but people can go ahead and go online and find out all about that.
Really, don't want to scare anybody off.
Nah. Well, listen, I'm really excited to talk to you about today's book. You know, it's gotten great reviews, and you know, it is one book that seems to be very timely, you know, in today's world. So let's go ahead and first of all start. You know, I think, you know, a lot of people may have an idea of what they think of as the ego, but I think it would probably be good to start with a baseline understanding of what the ego is and how you would address that in your book.
Absolutely. Yeah, the ego sure is getting a bad reputation lately, and truly the ego is nothing more and nothing less than our sense of who we are. It's our sense of self. It's our personal story. And the ego, our personal story, our identity, our persona, is always based in the past. It's the cumulative effect of every thought we've ever thunk, every experience we've ever had, every joy, every victory, every sorrow, every pain, every experience, every hope, dream, fear. It's all locked in the brain and in our subconscious. And the cumulative input of all of our experiences in life, that's what spits out you and me. You know, that's what creates Robert with Robert's story. And Robert's name and Robert's gender versus Kate Montana and the Kate Montana show and my story and what has brought me to be an author and to write about things like the ego. So it's really very simple. It's simply our sense of self and our personal story based in all of our experiences in the past.
Okay. Well, you know, we're going to be learning a lot more about that, you know, and then how, you know, we have, as human beings, have some misperceptions. But one of the things I had to kind of chuckle with, when you talked about that media kit, one of the first questions in that media kit was about Mr. Trump. You say that Donald Trump is the perfect example of a less evolved ego. And talk about timing. I mean, this couldn't be timelier. So, I mean, let's talk a little bit about, you know, when I mentioned in the introduction about the ego being expanded, not inflated, you know, and then we're talking about President Trump as having an ego that may be less evolved. So let's talk about an ego. What, you know, first of all, you know, what evolved, less evolved, or more evolved entails, and then we'll move into expanded, how it can be expanded.
Okay. Do you mind if I kind of back up a little bit and give some preparatory,
yes,
you know, pave some ground on how the ego is actually created? Is that okay?
I think that's
cool.
a perfect starting point.
Okay. Wonderful. Okay, I do too. So how the ego is created, it's a very natural process, and it's an inevitable process. Every human being pretty much on the planet has a sense of personal self. And the ego starts off the moment we come out of the birth canal, and we get pushed from this beautiful, warm, amniotic, dark fluid. You know, everything is peaceful, all is one. There's no boundaries and borders, apparently. And then all of a sudden, we get shoved and pushed and pummeled out into this bright, harsh, shiny, loud, scary, you know, place that obviously is like all this sensory data and the sights and the sounds and the cold and the rough and the dry and the, oh my golly, it's overwhelming, Robert, the amount of sensory information that the brain absorbs on a momentary, moment-to-moment basis. We actually are, your brain and my brain and everybody listening's brain actually receives about 11 million bits of sensory data every second. Every second
wow.
of your life. And it's
wow.
huge. Yeah, wow is right. And so we are constantly bathing in a solid message of I am physical. Because our senses, 11 million bits of data every second, keep telling us over, I'm physical, I'm physical, I'm physical, I see this, I hear that, I feel this, you know, I smell that. The body message is the first unconscious ground of the ego, I am physical. The second message that comes out of that physical message is also unconscious, and it bathes us 24/7 as well through the senses, and that is the message that I am separate. My eyes, you know, when they're open, show me that, you know, you would be sitting over, if, you know, if you were sitting here in the living room with me, you would be sitting opposite me, and clearly that you and I have nothing, you know, connecting us, that you're separate from me. The cat that I'm looking at in the chair you'd be sitting in is separate from me. Everything is obviously not me, and I can tell the where my skin leaves off and, you know, I am not the blanket and the little, or I am not the bottle or the breast. The baby unconsciously learns, number one, I am physical, physical, physical. Number two, I am separate, I am separate. The bottle is outside of me. The milk I hunger for and cry for is coming outside of me from the breast or the bottle. Mommy and daddy are outside of me, the dog, the cat, the teddy bear. And so this is a completely unconscious message we get. So the very first thing, and this is the bottom line basis of how the ego starts to be cooked up when we live here on planet Earth. It starts with the sense of, oh, my God, I'm overwhelmingly physical, and I am overwhelmingly separate and isolated from everything around me. So the unconscious message from the get-go, from the starting gate, is somehow I have to learn how to manipulate the environment around me to get what I need. You know, if I cry, mommy will give me the breast or the bottle. If I do this, that, or the other thing. And so that is the root place of the ego. What happens then at about age 12 months, somewhere around there, I'm not a developmental psychologist, so I'm not too sure about this, but it's close to around age 12 months. You know how we, you know, mommy and daddy and all the friends and people play with little Johnny or little Robert or Kate and, you know, go, oh, Donnie. And one day, the brain and our brain goes, click. It's not a conscious thought because it's all pre-verbal. But there's a click at some point in our brain where the association between the noise, the strange syllables, Johnny, is hooked up with this unconscious awareness of a sense of separate being. Okay? And the brain at that moment goes, click, oh. That doesn't have a language pronoun, oh, my name, you know, I'm Johnny, or oh, I have, oh, my name is Johnny, but there's an association. And from that point on, we start to associate the sounds that, you know, the verbalizations that are given to us. And our parents sit us down and do little teaching games, you know, I, mommy, me, mommy, you, Johnny, you know. And so hence the language teaching game concretizes and gives us even more information validating that sense of separation. Now I've got words to be able to describe it. I have me and you, self and other, Johnny and Sarah. And so we have, now we have the mind involved in developing slowly, actually quite rapidly, this story of the separate self that is totally based in our, oh, I am physical, I am physical, I am physical, and oh, I am separate, I am separate, I am separate. And so then as we learn and grow and have language and we learn, you know, our color, you know, our color skin is we're dark-skinned or we're Caucasian, we belong to this church or that synagogue, we go to this kind of school, we're in this socioeconomic bracket, these are the family's hopes and fears and concerns, and slowly we build this package of information in our brains that is a story about who I am taught that I am. Number one, I'm physical. Number one, I am separate. My name is Kate or Robert or Johnny. And I am a little boy, a little girl. I am Caucasian. I am African American. I'm Native American, I'm et cetera, et cetera. That is the root of the ego. That's how it all starts. And so all of our thinking processes are evolved, are with this story and this root of how this story starts. And so that's what the ego is all about. Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah, yeah, I can understand that. And you know, we were talking about separation. The first thing that popped into my mind is that cutting of that umbilical cord. I mean, that's like a real sharp way of, you know, of designating that separation. You know, and I can see, and I can see where the, you know, the language development and, you know, just, you know, when a parent is, you know, working with a child and child brain is developing, you know, all of those areas that contribute to the separation or, you know, identification and separation, you know, but that is a necessary, it seems that it would be a necessary development. I mean, I can't.
Absolutely.
So what we're saying is that's how the ego is developed, and that's even though separation, you know, we'll talk about it a little bit later as far as being an illusion. Even though there is that separation, that is. I don't want to say the right way. It seems like the only way to be able to help the child gain an understanding of the world.
Absolutely. Oh, you've nailed it in one, Robert. It's exactly right. That's why there's nothing wrong with the ego per se. The ego is simply the story that we learn to identify as the personal self, as a physical being, and it enables us to function in this world.
Right.
Without the ego, without the sense of personal self, we would be completely at sea. We would be lost. You know, autism, and there are some studies that are beginning to show this, what happens as we grow older and we get into our preteens and teen years, well, actually before preteens, something called the sensory gating system kicks in the brain, and it's automatic. The brain begins to filter out the extraneous parts of this 11 million bit tsunami of sensory information we get all the time. And as our story of self and how the world is becomes more concrete, the brain literally filters out anything that doesn't fit that story. Until finally, by the time I'm in college and I'm, you know, working on my PhD thesis, guess how much sensory data I can handle on a conscious level every second? And it's not 11 million bits. You want to take a stab at it?
No, I can't.
Okay, you're going to be surprised. 50 bits of information is all my brain can logically, linearly process. That's what you and I are operating at right now, having this conversation. 50 bits of data per second is all we can manage and all it takes for us to operate as we're operating right now. So all of the rest of this stuff gets filtered to the side. So then what we are absolutely, by the time we're young adults, we are absolutely firmly embedded in this physical separated story called Kate Montana and Robert Sharp and Johnny and whoever. So what happens is because we're grounded in this really kind of lonely, isolated space, how many love songs on the and love and lost songs that we heard on the radio by the time we're 20 years old, you know, that, oh, I miss you and I long for you and I need to be united with you and I have to find my soulmate and my other to be complete. And we're lonely beings. We're frightened because we are alone and perceive ourselves as alone. Now, it's actually not the truth. If we look at life from, you know, a mystical perspective or even from a quantum physics perspective, we have an entirely different picture of total unification and oneness. We realize at the quantum level that there are no borders, no boundaries. My skin is not the border of me. I am just part of this undifferentiated quantum sea of oneness. That's the actual state of affairs. But we have this appearance, the illusion of physicality and the illusion of you and me and the illusion of separation. And it's great. It enables us to play, but it's also a very frightening illusion because we feel vulnerable because we're separate from one another. That's our perception. We don't see the deeper truth until we later, maybe through meditation and other disciplines, come to a larger understanding about how life really is, which brings us around to your question about evolution. The ego, as you can tell already, is based, you know, the very first levels of the ego develop around survival, physical, you know, survival needs, air, food, clothing, shelter, procreation outlets. And so once the physical body is taken care of and it's secured, then the ego development goes to a whole other level. We desire belonging. We want to bridge that isolation we obviously feel and perceive every moment of our waking life. And so we reach out to others and we form families and we participate in community. And that's the next big level of ego development and evolution, is belonging. And once we've got the safety, security, and the physical stuff handled, and we've got the belonging, we're part of a family, we're part of a community, then the next thing that shows up on the evolutionary need scale is we want to be somebody. We want to feel self-assured. We want self-esteem. We want to be seen as somebody, you know? We want to shine. And so self-esteem is the next level of ego development, where much of our life is totally focused on trying to look good, be better than the next guy, prove to ourselves somehow that we're worthy and valuable people, okay? Because this, again, ties into our need to survive. Let's not just survive, let's have, you know, two houses and a yacht in the Bahamas and the Maserati And so the more we can start to, the mindset, the unevolved mindset around this level of function is, wow, well, you know, he who dies with the most toys wins.
Right.
We've got that on bumper stickers. Now, I bet you can tell somebody on the global stage right now who is now president fits into this fourth level category of ego evolution. Donald Trump is all about self-esteem.
I would say he thinks he's very, very important. Very, 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 very.
Mm-hmm.
So,
And his sense of importance is rooted in physical things. I have more money.
Right.
I have more power. I have more property. And so those are very elemental factors in ego development. And so this is where the majority of humanity is right now. And I'm so glad, and I so appreciate you having me on the show. It's such an important topic right now to understand what the ego is, because we have the blatant example of an amazing ego dancing as president of the United States right now in front of all of our eyes, and we're being able to witness, and there's no finger pointing at Donald Trump. You don't blame a kid who's in the fourth grade, you know, and say they're worse than in the fourth grade than they're not in college. It's just that he's in the fourth grade and other people are in college. And so now we have this great example of what doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, it's what doesn't work, the lesser involved ego that we all go through, and we all go through these stages. Okay, Robert? Nobody's excluded from this process. Evolution happens on an individual level and on a species level. So, which is very encouraging, because obviously we can all grow and change. Some egos are more fragile than others. His is one, because if we are more fragile and the more we become dependent upon things to prove how great we are, then, and we never reach that bubble bursting place where all of a sudden we become a little bit more human and we recognize other people suffer as we do, their issues are the same as ours, you know, you get slapped around a little bit and you get humbled a little bit in your life, and you start to wake up to, wow, you know, I'm not the only Joe on the street that bleeds or that cries into the pillow at night, and we start having something called empathy, and which is a beautiful thing. So that's when we're starting to get into that, you know, where religion tries to pummel us into being good Christian people, for example, doing for others as you would do for yourself, or, you know, love your neighbor as yourself. These are rules that have to be evolved egos have to be handed so that they will act decently, okay? But at a certain point in evolution, we no longer need the rules, because we've bled enough and we've cried enough and we've understood enough that, oh, my God, we really are all brothers and sisters under more than just under the skin. We're the same at the soul level, the psychic level, with, you know, there but by the grace of God go I. And we become what's called, we start entering into this more transpersonal place. But Bernie Sanders is such a wonderful, glowing example of a transpersonal, more evolved ego. You know, he's tough, he's smart, he's focused, he's capable, and he's also got such heart, such caring, such empathy. And he is beloved as a result, as well as respected and admired. So he's taken that next amazing step that we all need to take once we understand what the ego is and why it's tripping us up, why the Donald Trump ego doesn't work. That's the kind of ego that gets us into wars, that builds walls against neighbors, and then has to blockade and protect them against all costs. Because the ego sense of self is so fragile, that sense of self-esteem is so easily wounded, that if anything scratches that surface, oh, my God, it's just like a howling dog. The ego structure is so fragile and insecure, it can't handle any sort of challenge to it. And that's not a place where we can afford to live anymore, Robert, with, you know, somebody, an ego like that with their finger on the nuclear codes.
One of the things I want to spend a few minutes. First of all, you know, it sounded like as you're going through and describing ego development, it sounded a lot like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, from the meeting of the basic needs, you know, through the to the self-esteem, to the, like the self-actualization or the transcendent. So I really like the way that you explained, you know, the Trump ego, as far as in that space of, you know, having to having to have their self-esteem or their self-worth or identity measured by things, you know, and then, you know, because right now, I think and you mentioned the world, a lot of the world is right there. So to me, it explains, you know, first of all, how he got elected. You know, there's a lot of people who are feeling, you know, or that self-esteem and self-assurance isn't there. You know, that they're feeling a little wobbly, you know, a little less secure, you know, with their needs, so that, you know, they can identify with, you know, identify with him as a leader.
Absolutely.
You know,
a shining example of what they themselves long to be.
Yeah, exactly.
To have that
and,
level of power and material wealth. They hunger for that so that they can feel good about themselves and have that experience as an ego to then be able to go beyond it. We've got to go through all these different steps. That's how, you know, it's not possible to really skip a step.
I'm glad that you brought that up because doesn't our ego development, I mean, it doesn't seem to me to be a, you know, it seems to me to be fluid, you know, that you know, we can, you know, advance, you know, certain steps, but then, you know, there's a possibility maybe that our world is shaken a little bit, you know. Again, like with the hierarchy of needs, I thought, you know, like, for example, you know, you may be at the point of compassion and empathy, you know, of others around you once you've achieved security of, you know, health and home and, you know, that kind of thing. But if those basic needs are shaken up, you know, and pulled out from under you, then all of a sudden you revert in a way to, you know, making sure those needs are satisfied first before, you know, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And everybody operates at multiple levels simultaneously. There's not any one individual that's just, you know, well, you know, I suppose ego development as an infant, you know, in the first couple of 2-3 years, yes, you're at the absolute, you know, most growth in a physical sense level of operation, totally based on survival function. But after that, you know, we start changing and growing. And you're right, the hallmark of a healthy ego is its fluidity. And here's the beautiful part about moving into a transpersonal state, because the transpersonal state is when our sense of self and who we are becomes much less rigid. We begin to blur the boundaries between self and other, and self and even life and other life forms on this planet. And so, let me give you a really good example. For example, Kate Montana's ego. Her story, and I'm going to sound a little bit schizophrenic here and refer to myself in third person, but this is how it works, is that I know I am firmly in transpersonal territory. Yes, do I ever have issues and does anything ruffle my feathers? Absolutely. For example, when I first started going out on the speaking circuit talking about the ego, my very first talk was to a small crowd, maybe about 80 people. Well, you know, what? People fear public speaking more than almost as much as
crying.
And it doesn't matter whether you're speaking to 8 people or 8,000 people. It's all the same vulnerable. Oh, my God, what are these people going to think of me? Oh, my God, I hope I don't screw up. Oh, my God, what if I do screw up? Oh, my God, oh, my God. So anyway, Kate Montana, her story had tremendous public speaking issues, because Kate Montana's story included not one, not two, but 3 really horrifying screw-ups on stage. The first happened when I was 8 years old, and I totally blew my first piano recital in front of an entire audience. The second one was when I was in 8th grade, and I was standing up in front of the entire student body giving a talk on Santo Domingo and some guerrilla warfare there, and I totally forgot my speech. And I just, you know, it was totally humiliation in front of the entire school. The third one was when I was on stage in a musical in high school, and I, again, forgot my lines on stage. So I had these three nauseatingly horrifying moments of screwing up in public. So by the time, fast forward, and I'm 60 years old, and it's like, public speaking was enough to make me just want to go throw up. And before I walked out on stage that first day, I was like, I just was wanted to hug the commode right there. My palms were sweating, my heart was tight, my mouth was dry. And all of a sudden, Robert, this is what I realized. It's like, oh, wait a minute. I am not really Kate Montana. And we can get into how I really came to realize this, which is the whole point of meditation and getting into expansive practices like I talk about in the book to move from this locked down story, very rigid, barricaded story of the ego and the personal self and expand it. But so I'll talk about that in a second. But in that moment, because my ego sense of self is so now fluid, I stopped myself in mid-panic attack and went, oh, crikey, that's Kate's issue. Shit, I forgot, sorry. And I went, wow, that's not really me. And I swear, Robert, in a heartbeat, I was able to switch off the panic that Kate feels and walk out on stage as a connected being, as one with that audience, because that's what I really am. I am not, and I, no matter what my physical senses tell me, despite this chronic 24/7 messaging from our senses that I am physical and I am separate, it's not true. And if we can rework our conscious minds to the place where we become so fluid and reality becomes so malleable, then we are actually able, between one step and the next, to change how we function in the world. And we literally change our reality in that moment. I didn't change the outside world. I changed my inside world, how I engage the outside world, and everything was different. And from that moment on, I have not had one moment of stage fright.
Now, see, that view, that perspective, you know, that's the kind of perception that I really want the listeners to recognize, that, you know, by shifting that perspective, you were able to change your life experience, you know, and for so many people out there who are fearful or worried or anxious or even hesitant about doing something in life, to make that shift in perspective, then would be very freeing for them, you know, to be able to move forward and really live, you know, life
Absolutely.
In a more fulfilled manner. Yeah. Okay,
totally.
You know what? We're
it's
just
all
a little
about
bit,
liberation.
Yeah. Well, we're a little past halfway. I just want to let everyone know, if you'd like to, we're going to take a quick break, a 90-second break. And then if you have a question for Kate, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions for Kate, feel free to type them in, and we'll get to them right after the break. And then when we come back, now that we have that understanding of how the ego is developed and evolves, well, the next thing I want to kind of move into, and I think it would be a logical next step, is how it can be expanded and not inflated, and the important difference between the two. Okay? Okay, everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc. And we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide. Books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone. Thank you for staying with us again today. My very special guest, Montana, and we are talking about her new book, just released, The E-Word, Ego, Enlightenment, and Other Essentials. And again, you can find out more about Kate and her book, or books as well, by visiting her website, which is www.katemontana.com, and that's C-A-T-E Montana.com. And again, there is a direct link to her website in the show page description. And also, Kate, you are on social media as well, correct? So people can join you there, right?
Absolutely. Twitter and Facebook and Instagram.
And Instagram. Perfect. You know, I think I've got you on Twitter and Facebook, but I haven't added you yet to Instagram, but I'm sure I will within the hour after we end today's show. So I'm looking forward to that. Okay, so we talked in the first half about ego development and evolution. So now let's talk about, you know, expanded. How an ego expanded is good, and an ego inflated maybe not so helpful.
Well, we've already kind of talked about the inflate. We've already talked about the inflated ego a bit. So why don't we focus on expansion?
Okay, great.
The first step of expanding the ego is to, first of all, understand what the heck it is. Yeah, we can't change something if we're ignorant of its nature, which is why I wrote this book. I think it's so critical right now that people get a fundamental handle on who they really are, what the ego is. It's a tool for us to use and to operate efficiently in this world. But if we don't know who we really are, which is actually not the ego, it's that underlying sense of awareness, that amazing consciousness that I refer to in the book as I am, simplicity itself. But it's what, you know, all of life and existence and creation is based upon, the source, intelligence, energy, information, God, whatever you want to call it. So the first step in expanding the ego is to recognize what it is and what it isn't, and who we really are. Now, meditation is the best way to start getting an idea about what's going on behind all that fury in the brain, all those words and all that chatter upstairs. All the words in our head, that's really what the ego is. That's our ongoing running story about who we are and what who we are thinks about what's going on. But it's just a story. So first off, we have to get educated about how the story started, what the story is, and how to move beyond it. The next thing, and this is a huge part of my book, is I go through all these different exercises that I've used myself to move myself from a very rigid ego sense, for example, you know, Kate Montana has stage fright, to being so fluid that in a moment I can shift out of something, shift out of a story, and move into a different story and create that. So the book is filled with exercises that help you do that. Here's one. It's a very simple one. When I, for example, when I'm out walking and I'm taking a break and I see a beautiful, there's lots of eagles where I live in the Pacific Northwest. I'll see an eagle winging overhead and I'll just look up and I'll just go, oh my God, you're so beautiful. And in that moment of recognizing the essence of the eagle and its own individual expression as source, intelligence, energy, information, God, I am, expressing as an ego, an eagle, I will then in the next breath acknowledge that it's part of me. And I will cry out, oh, I am so beautiful. Or if I see a beautiful tree or a flower or a bush, I acknowledge it. Separate, apparently separate existence, okay? what my senses and my eyes and my fingertips and my nose are telling me, that it's a separate being. But I know that I am actually at one with that. I've educated myself sufficiently. I've read enough about physics, quantum physics. I understand that the quantum sea is what is undifferentiated, that there are no barriers, no boundaries between me and you, or me and a flower or a deer passing by. And so because I've educated myself into what is really going on, despite what my eyes and rest of my senses tell me, then I can start to coax that larger perception into being by doing this exercise. So I'll see that rhododendron bush in full bloom, and I'll go, oh, you are so beautiful. And then I go, oh, I am so beautiful. And it's easy to do this with other people. You know, after you've met somebody and they walk away, you know, you can't do it when you just first meet somebody, because, you know, you're too busy trying to remember their name and you know, and be present with them. But so often the way I do it with people is when somebody walks away that I've just met, you know, I acknowledge that, wow, there I am in a different suit of clothes and a different expression walking away. And I silently honor that person. Is like, thank you, I'm so glad to have met you. I'm so glad to have met myself in another form. Mm.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting. I do my little nature walk every morning, and that's one of my things that I love. I mean, I've done, you know, I haven't hugged a tree, but I appreciate the tree. You know, and there was one time, there was one butterfly. I really wanted to get the picture. I had my camera, and I always like take pictures. There's one butterfly. I really wanted the picture. I was like, you know, and I kept going to different spots. It's like, no. I said, I really want to get a picture of you. Come on, you know. And it actually finally landed in a perfect spot and got the picture. But I didn't take it to the next step about, you know, I am you, you know, and mm-hmm. it experienced that freedom of flight, which I think would have been a wonderful next step.
Absolutely. And there's a wonderful martial arts technique called soft eyes, which is taught in most martial arts. For example, you're staring at that butterfly. Well, instead of staring fixedly at the butterfly, you just soften your gaze. You still are looking in the direction of the butterfly, but you're not fixed on the butterfly, because when we fix our viewpoint on anything, it solidifies it. It creates the boundaries and the separation even more in our mind and our awareness, which is why this is taught in martial arts. Because if I'm fixed on an opponent coming at me, and I'm, you know, like, well, I'm fixed on that opponent, then I have no extrasensory perception and awareness of the energies around to my side and behind me. So soft eyes is a martial art way of letting the world in energetically, rather than fixing the gaze, so that we become more and more aware of everything around us from an energy perspective. And it's a letting the world in, and it's also one of the exercises I teach in the book about how to help dissolve this barricade called the self, you know, and start dissolve the walls that we build up, the story that we think we are, and uncrystallize it, dissolve the edges. So that's part of that, the whole expansion process. It's really not so much expansion, Robert, as it is a dissolving of the barrier that we have in our heads about who we think we are.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. That makes sense. That in itself is a shift in paradigms. You know, as far as the dissolving of barriers versus the expansion. Which would
it
be
really
an expansion of an existing barrier.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely is. And, you know, and so this brings us smack up into the spiritual disciplines of, like, Vedanta and Advaita, and there's all these spiritual disciplines that are focused on, you know, dissolving the ego structure. And there's a lot of misperception about what enlightenment is, and there's a lot of misperception about what the ego is, and the need to dissolve the ego. We don't, you know, we cannot function, Robert, without the ego. If I am, you know, just one with this undifferentiated sea of isness, you know, I'm not going to see that bus coming around the corner. It's just going to smack me right out of here.
That's right. That's not a good thing.
So, that's not a good thing. Not if you want to live long and prosper. So the trick is not to dissolve the ego. We will never. This comes from 30 years of spiritual seeking and God knows 20. At least 20,000 hours of meditation, is that the ego is with us until we die, either by enlightenment or through the physical death. Both enlightenment and physical death is death because it's the end of the personal self. And so we don't really want to dissolve the ego, Robert, because then there's no ground to be liberated. We call it liberation. Enlightenment is absolute liberation. But it's also death. There's nobody around to enjoy being liberated. And that's a real bummer. And that's what I fell over after about 17 years of, I would meditate for days on end. I mean, days on end and just take like a 20-minute break. So I was really a lean-in kind of gal with my spiritual disciplines. I wasn't fooling around. And so when my ego fell away in meditation, started to happen, God, almost 20 years ago now, it was just like, it was a joyous thing, but it was also a real shock because I realized I had not attained anything. Enlightenment was the absence of me. It was impossible. How could I own that? And it was like, oh, my God, now what do I do? Because I still existed. You know, when I would get off my meditation pillow, I was still Kate Montana. And I still had, you know, bills to pay and emotional stuff going on with a relationship and all the blah, blah that we have as human beings. So how to liberate ourselves and still be ourselves and liberate ourselves from the crucifixion of the ego and its limitations and its terrible, terrible fear. And it's based in its sense of vulnerability because it's physical and perceives itself as separate and isolated. How do we liberate ourselves from that? Well, absolutely. Enlightenment is one path out, but it's also death, and there's nobody around to enjoy the fruits. That's death.
Well, that's interesting. I had to wrap my head around that one. So basically, when you get to that period of enlightenment or that realization of enlightenment, you know, the where the self is and ego is, I mean, it's all is one. Then of course you then lose that definition, you know, of Kate Montana. So now, you know, everyone who's trying to seek enlightenment, you know, they're going to kind of be disappointed when the lights go off, it's like, okay, you know, to me, so I guess what I'm trying to get at is that, you know, so if enlightenment leads us to, you know, non-existence, really, should our goal be that transpersonal consciousness, we're keeping that personal aspect, but we have, you know, expanded our consciousness to recognize the interconnectedness of everything and use our physical existence to support, promote, and recognize that transpersonal aspect of existence.
Well, if you're asking me that question, which you are, I would say the answer to that is yes. When I hit the wall and realized that enlightenment was the biggest cosmic joke going, that it was liberation, absolutely. But again, there was no me around to enjoy it. I mean, I, Kate Montana, was bitterly disappointed every morning when I would wake up off of my meditation pillow and I'd wake up back into the dream of Kate. And so I was left with this horrifying, frustrating, all-or-nothing place. It was either ego or egoless transcendence. Never the twain shall meet. And there's no overlap
right.
between the two states. You're either awake or you're asleep. And so how to deal with still being an ego at the same time, you know, when I wasn't
right.
on my meditation mat. So
right.
I remembered this whole transpersonal mindset. Then and this, oh my God, this is what blew me away. And I actually learned this when in the middle of writing the E word. Oh my God, there is a middle ground where we can still be our beautiful selves and we can expand the story of ourselves to start including all of life, other life forms,
right.
other people. And we become this beautiful, fluid, graceful, accepting, emotionally, physically, mentally mature being that is so fluid in their sense of self that, you know, all the slings and arrows of the, oh, I get my feelings hurt over this, and, oh, I'm freaked out over that. You know, I'm freaked out about going on stage, or I'm freaked out about, oh, how am I going to pay my publicist, blah, blah, blah. It's just like, oh, I'm not really Kate. The more I can flow into that, the more I can adopt that quantum view, the more I can lean back, lay back into the bosom of the mysticism, the mystical awareness of, yes, we are all one, and start to train my brain through educating
yeah.
it as to what the ego is, educating myself about my story, doing my meditation, doing practices like soft eyes and the high me process and all these other things I talk about in my book, then I have this opportunity to just have this grand adventure where I'm no longer beaten up by my ego. I simply use it as a tool of expression and engagement, and life becomes this amazing dance. And that
yeah.
too is liberation, and we're still here to enjoy it with one another. So
really,
I'm
that's
so,
a good thing.
I'm so
yeah.
excited about
yeah.
it because I've really tortured myself for over a decade over this whole, you know, ego versus no ego, and what's the alternative? I'm so
yeah.
excited to discover this. Oh my God.
Yeah. And by the way, I love your publicist, so make sure you pay her.
No. Yes, I love my publicist, too.
Yeah, I know. She's great. Well, you know, see, I think, you know, and I'm thrilled that we had this conversation because, you know, so many people, so many of my listeners are, you know, really want to expand, you know, their consciousness, their awareness, live a life that's happier and more fulfilling. So, you know, and many of them, you know, try and will do that, you know, 20,000 hours of meditation or read those hundreds of books, you know, to try and, you know, attain that. And it sounds like, you know, the best way the way to make the best out of this life is to recognize, you know, the ego's there. It, you know, it has its purpose. Recognize, you know, have that enlightenment as far as the interconnectedness of everything and everyone, that quantum perspective. But to integrate that into our daily life and our actions and our perceptions, you know, change that view of the fear of going on stage, you know, drop mm-hmm. that, you know, recognize you're all one, you know, and you are, and it relieves the pressure, you know, and anything like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, if a mistake is made, I know, you know, I have an problem, you know, you know, I try to work on that, you know, so, but I step outside myself and say, that's okay, you know, uh-huh. that's just one of those things that I work on, and I don't,
exactly.
you know, beat myself up about it, yeah.
Beautiful,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this whole beating ourselves up thing, is we do it so well, but it's because we're so adamant, we're so locked into our stories. And we're so enculturated on how we're supposed to show up in this world and how we're supposed
yeah.
to be. There are so many rules, and that's one of the, you know, and I know we don't have time to go into it, but I go into this a lot in my book, and that's one of the pitfalls of spirituality. as well as religion. You know, we adopt yet another thicker ego. I call it the spiritual ego. You know, we have our regular story in life. You know, I'm a human being. I'm a separate standalone unit with all these issues. And then I become a spiritual ego on top of that. And then there's all these hoops I've got to jump through and things I've got to do and say and things I should eat, things I shouldn't eat, and things I should wear, and certain books I have to read, and I have to think this way, and I don't have the liberty of having a luxury of a negative thought. And, oh, my God, the pressure.
Right.
And it is simply another horrifying layer of the ego that we adopt that I call the spiritual ego. And then we have a double whammy to deal with. And so we wonder why we stay stuck. This is why we don't know what we're dealing with. And it needs to be talked about in very clear and simple terms, because it actually is very simple to understand once you wrap your head around it.
Exactly. Well, we are down to the end of the show, Kate. I knew this was going to be one of those shows that we could probably go on and on. But now, if you were to, when you put this book together, what's your goal? And what do you hope that the reader is going to be able to take away from reading the E word?
Oh, golly, I hope they are so liberated to understand who they really are and how simple it really is that we don't have to jump through all these hoops and do 1,000 disciplines and read 1,000,000 books. It's really a simple process of asking the one question, who am I, sincerely desiring the answer, and doing some exercises to feel more at one, loosen the boundaries of the ego story, and free yourself up. And it's so possible. It's so doable. And that's what I hope people get, is actually how simple it can be with simple understanding.
Yeah. Well, Kate, I really enjoyed speaking with you. I hope that we talk again sooner than 3 years, like we did this last stretch. So you're going to have to get another book out in a couple of years. I appreciate you spending the time talking with us, and I enjoy watching your journey through Facebook and your posts there, and I really want to thank you for your time.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
It's my pleasure. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Kate Montana. We've been talking about her newly released book, The E Word, Ego, Enlightenment, and Other Essentials. And again, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is www.katemontana.com. And that's CATEMontana.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.